This episode of Trail Runner Nation is brought to you in part by Tailwind Nutrition. And today's Tailwind Nutrition tip of the trail comes from me.
Whoa, Scott. I thought it was me.
No. You should have done the intro if it's my tip.
Roll with it, buddy. You seem to have something to say.
Here is my tip. And my tip is caffeine.
Caffeine.
Tailwind Nutrition just announced their new flavor, which has caffeine in it.
All right. That sounds good.
So where does caffeine play in ultra running? When do you use it? Can you overuse it? Does it help you?
All right.
And my personal experience is if I'm racing, to not use caffeine until later in the race.
All right.
To get that, it kind of gives me, I don't know if it does anything mentally or physically to me other than it psychologically gives me, oh, there's that Coke I've been looking for, and kind of a reward kind of thing. What are your experiences?
Well, I mean, it's been proven over and over, and I think one of the reasons it's in these products is because caffeine helps us perform a little bit better. So it's a legal performance-enhancing drug, but like all things, if you take too much of something, it can work on you backwards. So I would say in moderation, experiment in training, execute in racing, and go out and drink Tailwind Nutrition.
So get on tailwindnutrition.com, look out there, check out their new caffeine flavored Tailwind, and go out.
It tastes like caffeine, Scott?
I have no idea.
All right.
I haven't tried it yet. Well, I need to get it.
We got
to
try it.
I need to try my own tip and get some Tailwind caffeinated nutrition.
Well, if it's anything like their other products, it's going to be good. So I look forward to it.
So the new stuff has not only the calories and the electrolytes, but it also has caffeine.
A little bit of kick, a little bit of downhill in your Tailwind.
Yeah. This episode's podcast is brought to you in part by Petzl.
Petzl head torches, Scott.
Yes.
We're not calling them lamps. Lamps are at the side of your bed. Torches are on your head down the trail, right?
We're getting that time of year when gift giving is key. And I would say that a nice head torch is a great gift for a running friend or family member.
Well, you know that Santa's got one on his sleigh, and I'll bet you it's a Petzl. Now, Scott,
what's our
trail tip strategy? And here it is from Petzl. Beginning of the year, time to
or end of the year.
Well, beginning of the season.
Yes.
We're looking forward, and it's time to grow some base. And we've talked to Phil Maffetone. We've talked to Sock Doc, Dr. Mark Cucuzella, Sonny Blinde. We've talked
the podcast coming up. Talk Andy Jones Wilkins is going to bring this up a little bit later.
We have talked to anybody.
Spoiler alert.
We have talked to anybody that is anybody about the strategies of becoming a good and efficient endurance runner. And you know what they always say? Build that base. Don't go out and run so hard you run yourself into the ground, run into an injury, and you don't show up for race day. So at the beginning of the season, it's time for us to go out and enjoy this sport, run long and slow, and just get stronger for the race.
That's probably the best strategy I've heard all night.
So turn your headlamp, your head torch on, and go out and get some miles. Grab a friend.
And grab a Petzl. Thank you, Petzl.
Are we recording?
I'm not nervous. I got this. Let's just do it.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warr.
And I'm Faith Goss.
Andy Jones Wilkins.
Craig Thornley.
Craig Thornley, Andy Jones Wilkins. Here we are. We're sitting exactly on the day of Western States Lottery in one of the headquarters here at the Western States security facilities with guards all over the compound. Guards all over the place. It wasn't easy to get in here, guys. We had to put on some non-running gear, sneak past the guards and get in. So thanks for letting us in. We want to talk a little bit today about these two athletes that we have in front of us and get to the down and the dirty of what this lottery is and about where is ultra running headed.
Well, let's give some time. We have to talk about the timing of this. This is the evening of the lottery. The Western States Lottery happened this morning, and there are how many lucky lucky names made it today?
Well, 270 were drawn in the lottery, and then another three, those in attendance.
So there's some people partying tonight.
Yeah, apparently they were partying at the Ale House doing shots right after, is what I heard.
So I was there.
Yeah, we heard the Ale House was raging. Yeah. But of course, we couldn't. We had to come back here and shut things down and block off the compound to any of the 4,000 who didn't get in.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right.
So between us, these two runners have completed Western States 17 times, 9 for Andy Jones Wilkins, going for his 10th this year. And Craig, you have run
eight
times.
Thanks for calling me an athlete, by the way. I appreciate that. I take that right now.
Well, and they're no slouches either. I was looking at their times, and 20-hour finishes are not uncommon with these two people, which means that they are usually showered and in bed by the time we usually come into the stadium.
True, true. So, gentlemen,
we don't really shower.
So we'd also like to introduce the gong. We have Lord Ball's gong here, and go ahead and hit that thing. In the true spirit of Andy Jones' tap room, if you are indulging in one of his recommended beverages, if you hear the gong, it means go ahead and bottoms up. Is that right? Is that what we're gonna play?
The whole thing, or just
take a swig. Take a swig. The gong goes, you take a swig.
What if you're running and listening to the podcast?
Well, we'll definitely take an electrolyte
drink.
Out of your 20-ounce bottle. And I don't know what the criteria is to ring the gong. I think whenever Craig feels so inspired, he just reaches over, and anybody really within his arm reach. I mean, Andy, that could be you too.
Yeah, I think Craig ought to have control of the gong. It just seems to work better.
We might have some talking time if he has the gong.
Yeah.
Very good. So let me ask the first question. I'd like, if you don't mind, this lottery process. Is it just throwing all the applications into a big box and shaking it around, or is there more to it than that, Craig?
Is there more to it?
I don't know. What do you mean? Let me clarify. Yeah. I was not at the lottery this morning, and I've been to the lottery before. Did the names go into the big tumbler? Were there pieces of paper this year?
Yes.
Okay, because in years past it was computer generated.
Yeah, that was only 2 or 3 years, I think.
Okay.
Why
did you decide to go to the paper system?
It wasn't very well received. We got a lot of,
conspiracy theorists, or?
Well, no, there's a reason why we don't use computers for many
for voting
problems like voting or your Powerball lotteries. You know, you don't do that, right? I'm a computer programmer. It's easy to modify a program, and it's not as transparent. So even though we got a lot of very high tech folks on the team, this lottery seems to be better suited for a manual draw.
So we could actually see, if we left the computer in place, we just see a bunch of people from Silicon Valley making it in. Just people with pocket protectors.
High, high percentage of people from San Jose making the lottery, huh?
Well, I think now we ran all these simulations before the lottery, so we knew we had a really good idea what we were expected to see. So even if we use an electronic method of selection, we could compare that to what was expected, mm-hmm. and I mean, it wouldn't necessarily prove, but at least it would keep it somewhat honest. So, and we were pretty darn close today. So, was it just putting tickets in a barrel? No, it's been 3 or 4 weeks trying to get all these tickets squared away.
I want to know, how many pairs of scissors did you go through to cut those names into strips?
Zero. I can't tell you where I had them cut, but there's a machine that does that for you. So
we call it.
And actually, it got a little bit stressful there, because the first place I went to, they said, "Well, we can't get this done until Friday night, 8 p.m." That's not going to work. So they said, "Go to this other place." So we went to that place. We're not going to be able to get it done until Saturday. Well, that's not going to work. Try this other place. So we found the third place, and they were able to do it in about
and
an hour.
And, you know, it wasn't well received when I suggested we do the ticket circumcision ceremony. but we'll see how it flies from here.
Awesome. So how did we see the statistics of the lottery change this year versus last year with the implementation of the new lottery standards?
Well, the standards that we changed won't go into effect until the 2015 race. Mm-hmm. So there was no effect on those. So we're still using the old models for this lottery.
Do you think that people saw this as potentially like a last chance to do it on a 50 and so more people entered?
No, I don't think so at all. Mm-mm. There was some projection. People were guessing that, but no, I don't think it had any impact on that.
What do you think for next year? Do you think this year how many were there, like 2,800 entrants?
We started with 2,761, and then we culled that down a bit to 2,704 is what we ended up with today.
What do you guys guess?
For next year?
For next year. Do you think they'll be the same number? Or
I don't. I think the new qualifying standards are going to drop, I might say 10-15%. I think it's going to be a challenge. I think the number of races, the longer distances, I think it will have an impact. I'm guessing 10-15% on the total number. My guess is there'll still be 1,800 or so, but I think it'll make it a little bit more manageable.
Let me ask you this question. How many that entered the lottery this year had not run 100K or 100 miler as a qualifier?
Well, that's actually a hard problem without doing some analysis of the entrants. I can only go by what they chose as a qualifier, and they're in alphabetical order on that drop-down list, so they may have just picked the first race that they did. Mm-hmm. So if they chose a 50-miler, I can't prove that they didn't. But I had those numbers early, and I posted some. I'm forgetting what it was. It was like 30% or so used a 50-miler for a qualifier. So it really wasn't as high.
Go ahead. Hmm? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't really as high as we expected. And like I said, they could have also run 100-miler. They just didn't choose. I can probably get some better data here while you guys talk to him. But I did ask on the registration if you've run 100-miler. Or how many 100-milers you've run. So I do have that data.
Well Craig, I've got a question that both of you guys to weigh in on, all right? I have this theory that if I put my best finish time in there, that it's going to help me in the lottery somehow. Any thought on that? They're not even...
It's nice that you feel that way. that must make you feel good.
Yeah, I really wanted to, you know, bring all I had. I even used the right printing. I, you know, capitalized properly. Does any of that weigh in at all?
And what did you run last year?
Not enough to talk about, really. Okay. You saved some money on my belt buckle. Let's put it that way.
Thank you.
Well, that puts a stop to it. Let's hit the gong.
So this year, if you were putting in for the first time, if you had one ticket in, mm-hmm. you had less than 7% chance of being drawn this year.
That's
is that correct?
Six point five is what it ended mm-hmm. up with.
And as a person that attended the lottery today, I will say that there were a lot of first-time people that got selected.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I just posted that. I think it was 100 and...
yeah, it was more...
101 selected first-timers.
So a full 30%. Just over 30% well, were one ticketers.
Yeah, we should correct that. That's not first timers. That's one ticketers.
One ticketers. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Let me ask this question, and I'm just throwing it out there, and just to get some response. I'm not challenging any of the way you've set it up, but like Boston has certain times. I know you guys have had this question, but I haven't heard the answer. Boston has certain times for your age groups, and you know, men versus women. Did you think about that, or what do you think that would do to this race? What's the pros and cons of something like that for Western states?
I think I'll go in with an opinion first as a non-officially affiliated with the event person. I've long advocated for a 100-mile prerequisite and have over time become convinced that that's not necessarily the right move. And I like this 100K, 100-mile thing. I still have a little angst about the age business. I think it would be nice if there was over time some way to find a way to get some, especially 60 plus people.
Especially since we're getting up in that.
Since
age
we're
group.
Getting up in age, yeah. That because we know Craig gets requests from people who are like, look, I'm 69 years old. I'm not going to be able to run a qualifier again. This is my one last shot. I don't think that's Craig will jump in here, but I'm not sure that's been the realm of the discussion yet, because right now it's just trying to manage all these numbers.
Right.
But I think as it's chipped away, and this notion of the egalitarian nature of Western states, and this once in a lifetime thing that is so much a part of it now. I think it would behoove all of us to look at that. But as of right now, I think trying to narrow the number of applicants and trying to somehow manage those. But the data goes against my theory that when you compare the finishers who are running Western states as their first 100 versus those who have run other hundreds, the drops are the same. Hmm. And so my theory that we should have 100-mile prerequisite, like Boston, you have to run a marathon, kind of goes out the window.
Hmm. I'll take a shot at the qualifying standards being based on your performance, like Boston.
Yeah.
I will assure you there have been very long, rigorous debates on this. And Western States is trying to resolve this tension between, you know, the elite field versus the egalitarian everyman, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity to run Western States, and I think we're right where we want to be or pretty close to it. We have the Montreal Ultra Cup, and now we have UTWT, which allows the faster athletes to get in.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't want to exclude the everyday runner by tightening the times. Now, some may not agree with that. What we basically did was try to gate off the ability to get in and not put it on your performance necessarily. I mean, you still got to run 100 mile or 100K, which is a performance, but it's not the speed. It's not how fast you ran. We gated it on the resources that are coming in. So, yeah, there were very rigorous debates, and it's a hard problem, but we're trying to resolve that tension somewhere right in the middle.
So why
do you have to raise your hand? Yeah, to talk here?
Yeah, okay. My turn.
She doesn't okay. have
gone. 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 Oh. Gone.
We're not in school, are we?
Every time Faith asks a question, you have to ring the gong because they're usually Faith. The best questions.
Okay.
I was going to say, why now? Why 2015? Was there some sort of event that occurred that you said, yep, we need to implement these standards now? Is the lottery getting too out of hand? Why did you choose now to implement the new standards?
Looking at the stats from the growth of the lottery since 2000, I posted those on our website when we announced these. So I knew it was coming. If we waited another year, we'd be looking at 3,000 plus, right? This problem is not going to get easier to solve. I wanted to attack it when we had the chance in October. So.
What about the process and the debate? This goes to both of you about picking the races, and you looked at the globe when you picked the races, knowing that this is an international event. Can you walk us through some of that?
Absolutely, and we've gotten a lot of criticism on this, and it was very interesting to us that Hard Rock made their announcements of their changes on the heels of us by about a week, mm-hmm. right? And they took a very different approach. We wanted to objectively choose the races. And not handpick, not politically pick, because we've been accused of politically picking races, and you cannot do that with the races that we chose. There were no politics involved. There were no, we're going to pick this race because we like this race director, or we don't like this race director, or we're afraid what this race director is going to do to us. We didn't do that, right? So we listed all the 100-milers in the country domestically, and we chose the 30 largest. And the reason we chose the largest, because for one, vetting these qualifying races is a huge ordeal. So we wanted the lowest number. And we also wanted to have, you know, runners have the best opportunity to get a qualifier. If we're going to try to limit the number of races and then they only have 50 runners or 70 runners, that doesn't really help. You know, so
I was also, I've been very impressed as an observer because they were committed to having 100K distance as an option of their creating objective standards based on external measurements of the course difficulty and the terrain and so forth to say for these 100Ks, you know, it's not like they have to be the Hard Rock version of 100Ks, but they want them to be a legitimate test with a certain amount of mirroring what the person might experience at Western States within a time frame. 16 hours. 16 hours can be a tough 100K, but it's manageable in the right environment and the right training and so on and so forth. So I think that while I still advocated for a 100-mile prerequisite, I think this finding the sweet spot on the 100Ks has been great. And if you look at the list, there aren't all that many 100Ks.
No.
And as I've said in my column, I think this could lead to a growth in 100K events, which I don't think is bad for the sport. And by the way, I think these standards also could lead to a growth for the entire sport, where there is, look at how many marathons you go to where people are doing it because it's a Boston qualifier. Mm-hmm. Boston itself has created a cottage industry for other marathons. I know that's not Western States' intent here, nor is it Hard Rock's intent. But, you know, you take a race like, Waldo and Miwok that are already fully subscribed 100Ks, they're going to be more demand placed on them. And some of the what we might consider second-tier 100-milers out where I live in Virginia, Grindstone, for example, my guess is that thing's going to fill up and be in a lottery situation within a couple of years. I think that is a way that these standards are not just helping Western states deal with what's becoming a difficult problem, but are helping the entire sport. And that's something Western States has done for 40 years and isn't always noticed that much.
Sure, you've done a lot of race directors big favors when you put a star and asterisk by their race saying this is a qualifier. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden people are looking at Ultra sign up and saying, can I get in? When's the deadline for that?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So I'll finish. I only talked about domestic 100-milers. The domestic 100Ks, as Andy alluded to, we looked at the UR rating of surface and terrain, and it had to have a combined total of 6, so 3 and 3 or 4 and 2.
Right.
And then we chose the largest of those. And the 100K distance aligns better internationally. We did have to go look at geography more for the international races, so we couldn't just choose the largest, but we tried to choose the largest. We have some races in countries like Argentina, we have a race. They wouldn't have a way to qualify very easily anywhere else. So, that's basically how we did it, and we stuck with it. We had people come in afterwards and tell us, you need to do this, and it didn't reach our criteria. Next year you reach our criteria. We reserve the right to change it, obviously, if we're trying to adjust these numbers. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to change our criteria. And I don't necessarily want to criticize Hard Rock, but I'll point out that they chose a very different way. They used a very different method of choosing. They looked at each individual race. Is this hard enough? Does this have the right elevation, the right climbs, the right weather, and they took Western States off because it wasn't, it doesn't necessarily lend itself to, being indicative of an ability to run in the Hard Rock, San Juans. Our aid stations are far apart. Big climbs.
And frankly,
I don't need another excuse for people to come
right.
to Western States.
That's what I was going to say. You don't want it to be a qualifier and people going, I want to run Hard Rock, so I'm going to use Western States as a qualifying race. Yeah.
Right,
so.
But they obviously got a lot more criticism, and I will thank them for coming out with their qualifying standards in their public spanking of Leadville, because it took all the heat off of us. There you go. And they're harder to defend there. So.
Well, let's give them a gong for doing that.
Would you? Yeah.
So is this something that each of the qualifying races, should we look each year to see what qualifies as the list may morph and change based on your experience, or is it something that's pretty set?
It's been happening the last few years. If we had not changed this, we had 147 races on the qualifying list for this year. And there were about 75 races who had requested to be added to that list. And most of them were harder than our easiest race on our list. So to defend that, we can't include your race, it was really difficult. So we would have had 200 and something races on our list. What would that have done? It would have been way more than 3,000. So it kind of goes back to your question of why we did it now. Mm-hmm. It was more than just seeing the growth, but seeing the growth in the number of qualifying races and just being able to objectively say, no, you don't meet our criteria.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great change. I haven't been in ultra running very long, like Dawn and Scott, you know, have been, but I've seen this change coming over the last couple of years, and I think it happened at a great time. The sport of ultra running is changing, it's growing, and I think that Western States is one of those original races that it's a privilege to run this race, and I think that with the new change, people will see that more and more. And I think it came at a great time.
So overall, more pushback or more support?
Oh, by far the majority was positive, but there was few negatives, and they were just repeating themselves all over the place. So I would get it from every single media, and sometimes multiple from the same media. It's like, okay, you tweeted me, you Facebooked me, you put it on your own Facebook page, you sent me an email directly, you sent through the contact us form on our website, you said the same darn thing over and over and over. We get your point.
That never happens to Trail Run Nation. Never.
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
Never happens.
So, yeah.
If you had to generalize the feedback, positive and negative, if you could mention maybe a couple points from positive and negative, what the large majority of feedback was?
Basically what you said is that Western States, you know, is a prestigious race, and it should be an honor to run it, to get in it.
You know, when I first heard of the change, my knee-jerk reaction was, bummer, because I'm one of those that the first time around 100 miles was Western States. That was my experience. And I thought, you know, that was, it's too bad that's being taken away. But then I sat back and thought a minute.
Can I stop you there? We did not take that away from you, Scotty. You can still run 100K.
Right.
So we didn't take that away from you.
And but my point is that after I sat back and thought about it, if I would have been more prepared and had some more experience, like running 100K or running another 100-miler before I got into Western States, maybe I would have had a better experience. Not that I had a bad experience, but...
A better personal experience.
Right, right, right. So yeah. So I support it. I think it's the right thing to do. And it gives those people that are really, truly committed to the sport rather than a flash pan ultra runner to really work towards something and use this as a crowning achievement that now I have, you know, gotten to run Western States. So.
Yep. Thank you, Scotty. Yep.
All right. I'm ready for. I've got another topic. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Any more stuff?
Yeah. Gong for changing topic.
Gong for topic change.
You guys are drinking?
Yeah.
I don't have a beer.
Those out there drinking, you don't have to take a full drink each time. There's going to be a lot of gonging going around here. Andy, I'm gonna put this right to you. You're at the pulse of the ultra community. You've got a great I Run Far. You have an article, your tap room that's out there that Scott will link your tap room to this podcast, especially the topic on this change in the lottery, which has, I looked tonight, 155 comments supporting your article with dialogue afterwards. And the dialogue, great comments and great questions, and you've even responded to them. So if you're more interested to hear more stuff about this and some of Andy's thoughts, it's all right there at his tap room. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got a question for you.
And this is what it is.
And this is it. Hey, these course records continue to drop, and we're getting faster and faster as a community. Where is it going? Where's the 4-hour mile mark? And what's happening with the speed out there?
I think what's amazing is the races or the 50 milers are becoming a little bit like marathons or where there's the pack mentality. There's folks trying to break away from the pack. There's at least in let's call it the shorter distance ultras, like today's North Face race. Just observing it kind of from the side, you had two guys break out, then one of them dropped out, Harris dropped out, then the rest of the pack reeled in Cameron Clayton, and then Krar made a break, you know, after mile 40 or something. So I think you're seeing that, and you're seeing a lot of strategy going into the racing. You're seeing some guys just putting it out there. Now, I think that's great, but I also think the time, it'll be interesting to see what the time will tell on the longevity of those people, because more and more as sponsors are, I don't know if they're putting pressure on athletes, they might be, but as you're seeing athletes run 6, 7, 8 all-out efforts in a calendar year, which may include 1 or 200 milers, There's got to be burnout. I mean, I see the more talented athletes coming in, but I've also seen people come, fly in and fly out of the sport. And that worries me. You know, that worries me. So I think that where's the 4 minute mile? Where's the, you know, it's so course specific. It, so much of it depends on who else is at the race. And did you realize so-and-so beat so-and-so? That I think we need a little bit more time to see where some of those thresholds are. I mean, certainly in the iconic races, the Western States, the Hard Rocks, you know, course records are stout and they're standard and they're something to be really aspired to. But I think if you get too caught up in that, especially if you're an athlete and you're getting too caught up in that, I'm a little bit worried we're going to see some relatively short careers. And that you know, one of the things this sport's been built on is people like Craig who are in it for the long haul, and I hope we can keep that sort of ethos alive.
You know, I hope. Can I change the subject a little bit?
Yeah, because we can always
gong it.
Yeah, gong it.
No, you don't need a gong because this is along the same line.
I think you should still gong it.
Just because people are thirsty.
that includes this table drinks too. Yeah.
Bottoms up.
you make a very good point, and you two are great examples of 17 Western States finishes, all at screaming fast paces, and we were talking on the drive up here. Look at Mike Morton. You know, here a guy a decade ago came in and just killed the course, and then comes back after, going overseas and serving the country and then getting back into it. And we see more and more of these people that can be Ironmen throughout the years. And I think you guys are good examples. So what do you attribute to that?
Well, first off, Mike Morton thought he had a stress fracture last year, remember? In the spring, and it comes out. Turns out he had shrapnel floating around in his leg. So
ran Western States with shrapnel.
I think the guy's
like,
a little. He's a little tougher.
Cheers.
That's some toughness that I don't have. I'll tell you that.
Literally an Iron Man with shrapnel.
You know, I think Morton's a great example of the longevity people. The people I admire in the sport, Rock Horton, Tom Nielsen, Tim Tweetmeyer, Ann Trason, these are people that are just, they defy the odds. When I talked to Mike at the end of the race last year, I mean, he was psyched, but he's also a little disappointed. I mean, he was in it. He wasn't in it just to make a little comeback.
He was in it to win.
Yeah. And he may be coming back again this year in it to win. So, I mean, I think that's great. And those are the people that I hope everyone's listening to. Those are the people that I hope understand the big picture in this sport. And, frankly, I mean, I've gotten to a point in my running career as I'm kind of waning and getting slower and so forth that I, people ask what my racing schedule is. I run one race a year, and I'm going to run this one race one more time. But that's, that's what I've made as something that I believe in. And I think Craig and the Western States Board have allowed folks to make this a passionate part of their lives. So, I love the influx of the fast runners. I love the fact that there's money coming into the sport. I love the fact that there's opportunities for people to essentially make a modest living as runners. I just really, really hope we don't lose our roots in the midst of that.
I want to clarify something you said. You said as you were waning, you ran Western States in sub 20 last year.
Yeah.
And in the second hottest year.
Oh, don't.
That's screaming.
He's waning. Monkey Boy beat him.
Scotty, that's really nice. God damn it, I'm not waning.
How many?
Gone that, man. I'm not waning.
You heard it here first. How many chicks finished in front of you last year?
I can't remember. I don't race
against
them.
You don't even know.
Oh. I only race against the men.
So it is a lifestyle choice, and I like that part that you, whoever brought that up,
just did.
That's right. I liked what I said about lifestyle, because it is about longevity and staying with it. And I know I'm healthier when I'm running, and I know that if I don't have a reason to run, then I'm often not running. So it's good. I think that it's important that we can have some longevity and stay with it.
If, as veterans of the sport, if you could give one piece of advice in terms of how to foster longevity, what would it be? Mm. AJW?
I think you shouldn't race too much. You should balance training with rest, but also you need to just keep an eye on the big picture. Really, really keep an eye on the big picture. A good friend of mine who I ran with a lot when I lived in the Bay Area, Kevin Sawchuk, who himself's a 10-day buckler here and now works medical at Michigan Bluff. We used to go on long training runs. We talked a lot about if you could have that one perfect 100-mile race and then never run again. Or someone said, look, you're never going to run another 100-mile race, but you can run 3 miles a day for the rest of your life or 5 miles a day for the rest of your life. What would you pick? Hands down, the latter. Mm-hmm. And that's part of having the idea, the view of the big picture. I mean, waning, all jokes about waning aside, while my running career at Western States is going to end in the 2014 race, I want to continue coming here. I want to pace people. I want to run other hundreds. I want to, test myself in other environments. And keeping an eye on that long view, that being 65 years old and still running.
There are wheelchair races, so you have that to look forward to.
Hey. Sometimes the gong just gongs itself, doesn't it? So mentioning Kevin Sawchuk, I'll bring up a quote from him that he has said that he believes.
Not the one about tasting his urine.
No. I'm glad you said it.
Wait, after Don, I need to hear that one. So, Don, go first, and Andy.
For the record, and it is recorded, I did not bring that up. And I throw this to you guys and anybody around the table here. 7 years of strong racing. He says any runner is capable of performing 7 good years. After that, you're on the waning side. Either you're the learning side or the waning side, but you have 7 strong racing years in you. Not much more. And you can look at the records and see that. And he's also said it doesn't matter when you run those 7. You could run 4 here and 3 later, but 7 strong, hard years is what you have. And that's a Kevin Sawchuk theory. So.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I stretched it. I think I stretched it to 8. Myself, we had the fire year, but I really felt like from 2004 to 2011, that was my sweet spot. Mm. And, it's great that I'm still involved in the sport, but I'm not like I was in 2007. And that's just the way it is. And you can pick your 7 years. It's not necessarily when you're from 35 to 42 or 28 to 35. But if you do study the stats and you watch people fade away, if you will, he's kind of on to something there.
Yeah, he's a sharp man and a neurologist and well qualified both as a passionate athlete and also as a medical mind.
I'm looking forward to the 7 years ahead of me.
You haven't started racing yet, Scott?
No.
When are you going to pick your 7?
I'm thinking after 50.
I would recommend starting soon.
I think it's important to mix up the distances and the energy systems you use. If you just continue to pound the same, 100-mile pace in all your training runs, then you are limited. And we have some pretty high-profile examples of that where, people didn't believe in doing speed work and they advocated it and now they're overtrained, right? Mm-hmm. They did the same kind of training every single day, run that 2-hour or 3-hour pace every single day. So I think mixing it up, and we've been getting on the track over the years, which has been fun, training for a mile. We got on the track.
I love getting on the track.
I do too, but you can't get on with very many of AJ Devas because he's takes up 3 lanes with his arms. His form, so it's good. He's a lane farmer.
I like those tracks with wider lanes. Maybe we should do the next mile on a NASCAR track.
Hey, so let's bring, to your point, Craig, let's bring back Mike Morton and say if he ran back when he set that record,
97.
If he ran hard from 97 to this year, there's probably very little chance he could run with that same intensity that he ran in 2013. How could you? So to Kevin Sawchuk's point, you can pick your 7 regardless of what years.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we can find a bunch of outliers, right?
Sure.
Look at Tim Tweetmeyer.
Yeah, well.
I mean, and Trayson. There's a lot of outliers, so yeah. I'm not sure how applicable that is.
We're
to
right. We're talking about the bell curve. We're talking. Yeah. We're in the bell curve talking, and there's people on either side of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I'm not going to
argue
with
Kevin. About with the over, what I worry about with the over racing is people don't even get their seven. They get 2 years. Yeah. They get 3 years, and they're gone.
So we're going to talk about the Kevin tasting his urine story?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's doing it? You doing it?
Well, you know, Kevin is a
gongness sucker. This is a gongable.
Kevin is a good friend of mine, and as he said, a professional neurologist. And we had a veterans panel a couple years ago. And Kevin was talking. Someone asked a question about salt, and how you gauge. You know, I get cramps all the time, and I need salt. And Kevin said, in his very Kevin Sawchuck-y way, "Well, what I do, and I know some of you might find this hard to believe, is I just, you know, when I pull off the trail and I have to relieve myself, I just put a little dab of urine on my finger, and I taste it, and I can tell by the taste." If I need salt or not.
It's on video.
And it was, I mean, you would have thought, I mean, this room, we had 200 people in the room, and no one knew what to do. And I don't know, I was moderating the thing, and I jumped in and said something about puking or something to get us off the subject.
No, I think you said that the pacer, it's not the pacer's responsibility.
Yeah. That's one area it's where it's not the pacer's duty to taste the runner's urine.
Did you really say that? That was a great comment.
I think it got cut. I think it missed. I think the video missed that part.
Did it?
Yeah. Well, we ran out.
AJW.
But it was takes. Said. I will attest to it. It was said. It was hilarious.
Was he joking?
No.
No,
not at all. No. Oh, no. No. Not
he
at all.
Was not. Kevin doesn't joke about tasting
his
urine.
He was very serious. Very serious. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, not to change.
So you want to go back to the 7-year theory now? Change. Right. I'm sorry, Kevin. I love you.
Kevin doesn't listen to this podcast.
Okay.
he'll just listen to this segment. Yeah. So let's talk. Let's kind of backtrack a little bit about the 100-mile runner and the 50-mile runner. You know, what makes a 50-mile runner? And you take that blazing fast 50-mile guy, and you put him in a 100-mile race, and there's no guarantee that they're going to reproduce with outstanding, you know, outcomes. What? Any thoughts on it from either of you guys? Maybe there's not even a decent question there.
No, it's a decent question. I mean, it's fun. To see these 50-milers, these fast 50-milers that have never run a 100-mile. It's fun to see them.
I love those guys.
You know, was it Cameron Clayton last year who had never run 100?
Yep.
And he was claiming that he was going to run some crazy fast time. I forget what it was, 14 hours, 14:30. He didn't want to run anything slower. And true to form, he was out there in the front blazing. Like, wow. Well, it was fun to watch until it was over. But it is pretty exciting because they can do a lot that you know, maybe the 100-milers hold themselves back or they limit themselves, and these people without the experience that are really fast, they don't have those limitations. They're like, I'm gonna go run fast. You guys want to stay with me? Try to stay with me.
Yeah.
And then the canyons happen.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but not always.
I really don't think 50-mile success is. I mean, it's a factor in whether you're going to measure someone's success in 100, but it's way down the list. I mean, and I've for years I've looked at, you know, the entrance list for Western States and seen guys with 50-mile times that are just way off the charts.
Yeah,
and it's just hard to predict how they're going to do when they get into race day.
Rob Carr did pretty well last year.
Rob Carr did amazingly well. When Scott Jurek first made the transition to hundreds, he did amazingly well. Hal Kerner was, you know, in his early 20s and mid-20s was blazing the 50Ks and the 50-milers and made the transition. But as many as those, there are also guys that just have not quite mastered the ability to go past 8 hours, manage their stomachs,
yeah.
You know, keep the mental focus. Right. That going longer than 8-9 hours takes. It takes a serious mental focus. And yeah, they don't have to run at night. You know, if they're fast enough, they can get in before it even gets dark. But it's a different ball game. Somebody said to me, you know, really, running 100 is like running 350s. 250s, and it's maybe not entirely true, but it's closer than running 250s.
Yeah, and some of those 50-mile runners that translated to become 100-mile runners, maybe they were the 100-mile runners to begin with.
Right.
There's just something different in their metabolism, their ability to move oxygen and metabolites and glycogen and all the things that happen inside besides just what's between the ears. We have to have lung capacity, heart capacity, the liver has to work right. You have to have a lot of internal stuff that allows you to stay out there for 20 hours or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Some guys stay out there that long, guys. I just .
Chris? Where's my brother? Oh, there he is.
So, did we beat that subject to death?
No. So, do you think it? As times drop, do you think it's gear? Do you think it's knowledge? Do you think it's what do you think? What lends itself to these times decreasing?
Well, I think I alluded to that. I think guys like Cameron Clayton, they're coming out without any fear of, they think they can run faster than everybody else has run. Mm-hmm. And some of them are friggin' doing it.
Yeah.
So.
And they have a certain amount of courage to just try it. And many of them blow up, but the ones that don't blow up, they amaze themselves. Rob Krar, second place Western States, he just went. He just went and it worked. Somehow. He's a super, what was he, a collegiate and a post-collegiate, 10K-er and cross-country guy. I mean, it's just amazing. And when those things happen, you take notice. But I'm not so sure. I mean, gear and nutrition. I mean, nutrition's the big variable, right?
Yeah.
I mean, people get brought to their knees when they're puking, down at Sandy Bottom or on the way to the river. And it happens quickly, and you don't know what the heck to do, especially if it's never happened to you before. And some people recover from it and figure it out, and some people don't. Then you got these people with iron stomachs, Nick Clark, who can just, he can put anything in his mouth and just run 100 miles, almost on autopilot. I think that's what kind of makes 100 milers so fun. There is a lot of it that's between the ears when you get past, 70 miles. And it tests a lot more of a person, I think, than a 50 does.
So let's talk about between the ears with both of you guys, because 17 just Western States finishes, but a ton of races on your race resume. How do you run your own race when Andy, you have been a second place finisher at Western States, and so you've had
in 2005. So you have second place. So, Scott Jurek beat me.
Wow, we knew we couldn't go a podcast without talking about 2005.
Do you guys have a little?
That's a double call.
Do you want to talk about 2005?
Yeah,
let's talk about 2005.
What was so spectacular about 2005? I heard a wind was at your back the whole year.
Yeah, it was.
So how do you go out and have a 50-miler guy that's pushing the pack and pushing the pace? How do you stay, and this could go for anybody, mid-pack, how do you stay within your own race when there are others around you that you want to tell yourself, I could keep up with that person. I should be up there. How do you stay within yourself when you're running for a long ways?
Well, I try to not focus on the little micro competitions. Like, are you going to get into this aid station faster than this person? Or I don't want them to get by me. I just try to totally detach from that little micro competition.
Micro competition. I haven't heard that term.
I just coined it just now.
Very nice. So,
micro competition.
Yeah. Did it work? Google it. Google it, my friend. I just try to think about how big the race is, and it's a macro competition, not a little tiny.
Mine's a little bit less esoteric than Mr. Race Director over here. I'm a Western States course geek, as memorize every tree and so the way I run my race there, and in a couple others that have run a lot, Vermont, Angeles Crest, Wasatch, is just having that course knowledge. My advice, if you have course knowledge, if you can remove the variables on race day, if you know literally, okay, from this switchback, it's going to be 13 minutes and I'm going to be at No Hands Bridge, okay? You just know that. It's ingrained in you. You stop thinking about the other people. Now, Craig here and I have had some epic battles. I think I'll talk, what was way too cool? What year was that? I can't remember. 07, 06, 07. where I came upon him at mile 26. He pulled ahead of me. I was cramping like a beast. We were having a micro competition. He was leaving 49 when I got in, and he got whiplash going up that hill. He ran, and he did not let me catch him. He was not going to let me catch him. And it was not only because I said I'd buy beers for all the Oregonians who beat me that day, which I had to do to the tune of like $564, by the way, but because that little piece, we knew where we were, we knew what we were doing, and it was just, and we were passing other people. It was like they weren't even in the race. We were just two people in this race. It was awesome.
Yeah, I do the micro competition late, just not early. Yeah. Try not to do that early. Like totally detached from trying to race people into aid stations. So
if you took Western States on July 1st versus whenever it's run, right, and you're running it by yourself, do you think you'd come out with the same question to both of you? And we'll start with Andy first. Would you come out with a better time or a different time if you were racing in the pack with the group or by yourself with all the aid stations, et cetera, and all the support?
Oh, if I were just running the race myself.
Solo.
Yeah. It would be closer to the real time than you think, just because every time I get on the course, I want, even today we're out running in the snow, and I want to see where I am. And I know I've run this section of trail so many times that I should get here in 30 minutes. And if you break the course down like I have into about 70 little micro sections, anytime I'm out on one, I'll try to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, if it were in all reality, if it were July 1st and we're out just running the course, I'd stop in Michigan Bluff and hang out and sit down and so on and so forth. But it's not the external competition, with one huge, massive exception, and that is the top 10. We haven't talked about that yet, but something that makes Western States so, so unique, in my view, is this: you're automatically in if you finish in the top 10. So while there's tiers of the competition, right? There's all the guys and gals who want to win, okay? Then there's that large group that wants to get 24, and then there's that group that just wants to finish under the cutoffs. But that top 10 group, and Craig's been 10th twice, so he can talk about this too. It's an incredible, and that does make you run faster. And doesn't matter who the person is. If you're in 11th, you want to be in 10th. And if you're in 9th, you're scared that two guys are going to come and get you, and next thing you know, you're off the back and you got to throw into the lottery. And that's pressure, I tell you. Do you agree, Craig? That.
Oh, I definitely agree. But to your point, would I run faster by myself or not, or with the group, the discus thrower Al Order made a statement about competing with people and not against people, and that he when he competed with people, it rose the level of his, of his performance. And I totally think that is that's applicable to these 100 milers. There's no way I would run faster by myself. I wouldn't even run close.
You get a lot of support. You get a lot of support from the others that are out there that are running.
Yeah, and they help you bring the best out of yourself, and vice versa, right?
Yeah.
And it's not fighting with each other. It's like let's kick some butt here. And we do.
AJW, love Western States more than any race course out there. I mean, you could just see it. You talk about it. You write about it. What's so great about Western States?
I love the history of it. I love the history of the trail, the history of the event, the whole idea of the event, the ritual aspect of it. Every year, fourth Saturday in June. Starting today, the lottery, it's like I'm a school guy, right? Today's like the first day of school, and the awards at the end of June are like graduation. And it just builds on itself. It creates, for me, a guy who's kind of had a life of, I've moved around a lot. I've got, three middle schools, high school age kids right now. It gives me grounding, me personally. Grounding in something. It's also an event that's truly larger than any individual, than Craig, who's the race director, than Tim and Ann, who are the champions of all champions, than Gordy, than anybody. And being a part of that, being able to live that, is amazing. And I've been blessed and privileged to be able to do it 9 times. I think the other thing I love about it that we're really seeing, and we've talked a lot about it this weekend here is that it's now become, as we talked about earlier, the demand for the race is so high, it's become a once-in-a-lifetime experience for many people. This is part of why Craig and the board and the team are working so hard to create experiences around the week in Squaw Valley, experiences around the race itself. I mean, we have people who got picked in the lottery today who I'm sure have their hotels booked, have talked to their boss about the time off they're going to need, and they're renting the RV to come out here and make it. That's beautiful that this event can do that, and it can change lives. And just being a part of it makes it extraordinary. And lastly, there's a mystique to it. There's something that happens to people on the Western States Trail that is like what happens to golfers at St. Andrews or baseball players at Fenway Park, or, you know, it just brings out greatness and specialness in ways that few other events do.
We'll never get in. After that, we'll never, ever get in. You thought you had a problem, Craig?
So there's no way I can top that, but I will add that if it was just the race, I probably wouldn't be the race director here. Western States is much more than just the race in June. You know, there's three pillars of the foundation, Western States Endurance Run Foundation. One is the race, put on a world-class 100-mile ultramarathon. Another is trail stewardship of the Western States Trail, preservation, you know, dissemination of information about the trail, the fights, the legal battles that have gone on and then are continuing to go on to get designation, you know, federal designation for this trail, 100 miles of it, is amazing. And the trail work we've been doing, we had 6 days of trail work to try to get Pucker Point and Deadwood Canyon ready for this winter after the American fire. The turnouts that we got with just the limited, we couldn't even open it to the public. It was just amazing, the passion for this trail. And then the third leg of the foundation is medical research. It started with Bob Lind, who drew names today. He was number three. After Gordy and Ann, he drew names. You know, it started with him. I don't know if you've seen some of the early interviews with Dr. Lin, but he thought what Gordy did was a once-in-a-lifetime, you know, fluke. This was such an outlier, it was never going to happen again. And, well, we now know that was not true, but he continued to, you know, be interested in what's going on with this body when you do this, and how does it adapt, and how does it, you know, how does it do it? And now with Marty Hoffman in the last 5 or 6 years, you know, we are leading research in these kinds of environments and exercise. So yeah, we get people from all over the world. And this year, when Andy talked about trying to have more events, build up the events pre-race and then also post-race in Squaw Valley and in Auburn, we have a 2-day medical conference on Tuesday and Wednesday for the first time. And, you know, we hope it's well attended. It's pretty bold.
Is that open to the public?
Yeah, you got to, you know, pay the registration fee. It's a conference. But, loaded with speakers with lots more educational background than me, and I'm one of the speakers. But, yeah, it's mostly doctors. But I'm giving a race director perspective of the medical.
Bring your gong.
Oh, that's a good idea. But yeah, Western States is much more than just the.
Yeah. And here's the, you know, it's like you're saying, it's a much bigger thing than race day or those that are just running the race. You can get you can be part of Western States, whether it's out there, you know, doing some trail work, or whether it's going to the training runs or pacing or volunteering at an aid station. And I'll tell you what, you can get the same electricity about with volunteering at this race than you can running the race. Mm-hmm. And that's the part I just love about it.
Well, Andy doesn't have any experience with this except once, but, you know, not running the race, you actually can really enjoy it. Now I'm on this will be my third year where I don't run the race.
I'm a race director. It's a pretty incredible experience.
In 2012, I was injured and wasn't able to run, and I came out and hung around the edges of the race and ran around a little bit with Craig as he was checking with the aid stations, captains, and so forth. Was it Bill Plexico? Bill Plexico at Robinson Flat and Dennis Zilaf at Devil's Thumb. And it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing what goes on as you're just running. You know, you're in tunnel vision and running through. And in fact, it was when I left, I was really bummed I wasn't able to run the race. There's no doubt about it. But when I left, I felt as enriched by that weekend as I do when I run the race. And that, I mean, and that's what said to me, okay, Craig, this is it. I'm going to get my 10th finish, and then I'm going to come here for at least 10 more years and do this stuff. Just tell me what to do. Oh. And I mean, that's just, and it was great to be there for that, to see what that is all about.
Craig, I'll get that on audio, that clip. I'll come here for 10 years and do whatever you need to do. I'll email that piece
that
to you.
That could be your ringtone.
As somebody that's
here's volunteer. Another good question. She's raised.
No,
she raised her hand.
I was just gonna say, as somebody that has been a volunteer in the last 3 years, people kill to volunteer for Western States, even to get the opportunity to be a volunteer. Being on the safety patrol team, when somebody hears about somebody that dropped off the safety patrol team, they're like, "Oh, please, like, let me help out." Or somebody that wants to do medical at Robinson Flat, or, you know, "Please let me help out." You know, people are killing not only to be in the race, but to be part of the volunteer effort, too. And that's amazing.
How many volunteers do you have out there, Craig?
We think it was somewhere around 1,500 or 1,600.
How many T-shirts do you give away?
It was 1,550 T-shirts. But we're pretty sure there were more than that. And then not everybody got T-shirts. Some of them, like Bill Plexico, have been around for so many years, they don't necessarily continue to get T-shirts. And speaking of that, there's T-shirts right there. There's two bags of T-shirts that I just got from Jerry and Norma Gore. Some are medical, yeah. Jerry or Norma was the medical captain at Michigan Bluff for 23 or 4 or 5 years. And Jerry Gordon was the aid station captain. And they just brought me all these shirts from 23 years that they were captains. So... Yeah, it's a lot, and we have to shut down the volunteer form because we get too many volunteers.
But that would be in the category of good problem to have.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm not complaining about it.
It's probably very unique to Western States. Oh. I mean, usually the race directors are scrambling to try to find people. And, it's good to be part of Western States, regardless of whether you're running it or not.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
What's next for you guys? What's going on with you, Andy? We can find you where? At the Tap Room, certainly, on I Run Far.
I Run Far, AJW's Tap Room. I'm heading back to Charlottesville tomorrow. I'm going to be out here in late April, early May to train. And as I said, I run one race a year now. So for my family and I, it's become an annual pilgrimage. We'll get out here. We'll be around the edges of the medical conference. I'm actually trying to get some folks from UVA medical school to come out for it, and some folks from the East Coast that I think would benefit from the experience I think what Craig said about the medical stuff that Western States have done, it's not well publicized, and it needs to be a lot more well publicized. I'm going to do my part actually to do that, to get that publicized. But we'll come out a week before the race and we'll travel around and camp out and stay for a while. But it's training, you know. I'm 46 years old. It's harder to get the batteries charged up. It's a diesel engine. But I have to say, going in and running number 10, I didn't think when I finished my first one in 2001 that I'd get to this point. And you know, I'm gonna want to compete, but I also feel like it's a little bit like a victory lap too, and I want to savor the experience.
Great.
When Tim Tweetmeyer was talking about retiring in the last few years, he had that same kind of talk. Well, maybe I'll just run this and run just under 24 hours and talk to all the aid station captains and not compete. I have a feeling you're going to compete this year. just my guess, knowing you.
We're going to try to stop you on California Street and have a discussion. We'll see how long that lasts.
He wants to be in that top 10 so that he can say, you know what?
I
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it to number 11.
I have to admit, I've thought about it.
Okay, there's your question, Scott. If you finished in the top 10, would you come back for an 11th?
No. And I mean, honestly, that'd be amazing. It'd be amazing to turn down a top 10 spot.
Yeah.
But no, I'm going to finish at 10. And I've been so blessed and privileged to be able to do it this many times. And these spaces are coveted. They're coveted. And I've had my days at Western States. So, I mean, it'd be great to get another top 10. And if the conditions are right and there's the right amount of carnage. And, I mean, even last year, I 14th man, 34 minutes out of top 10. I was like, what if? I don't think it's all that realistic, but there you have it.
So Greg? Again, how many women beat you last year?
Three.
Three, okay.
Three.
Just wanted to put that. So you were triple chicked.
Yes, I was 17th overall, 14th man.
So you finished in front of Megan?
Four.
Barely.
Yeah.
Were you racing Megan?
I think I had Pam Smith in front of me, Amy Sproston in front of me, who was between
Nikki?
Two. Nikki Kimball. Now, Nikki Kimball's beaten me a whole bunch of times.
She has me too.
So I don't feel bad about that.
What's next for you, Craig?
Well, I'm
besides gong ringing.
I'm actually getting back into climbing again.
Oh. Yeah,
I've been dealing with an injury that's lasting a long time, so I've been riding a bike and rock climbing again, and so I have no races on the schedule yet.
Awesome.
So, I've been dying to ask this question too. Today was the lottery. There are veteran runners, first time runners of Western States. As they're sitting down tonight, or probably even at 10:30 this morning, saying, "Oh my gosh, I just got in Western States." As veteran runners, what would you say they should be doing over the next 2 months in preparation for Western States, besides the logistical stuff, getting the motor home? And
You better be running.
Okay. Thank you.
I think I'd say you spend the next 2 months building a good solid foundation, just running a lot of miles at a real easy pace. Then I think around February you start picking up, maybe get a week, once a week, twice a week, picking up your speed a little bit, getting into some hills. And then I think from in March, April, and May you're going to be wanting to get specificity, whether you live in, I mean, we had people from Florida and Arkansas and Italy and New York City. I would ask those people, figure out a way that they can. I'm coaching a guy who's from Charleston, South Carolina. I've said to him, look, figure out a way to get into the high country, get some 1500 foot climbs, and you're not going to do it on a treadmill. You're not going to do it on the stairs of some skyscraper. You gotta get on the trail. I'd also say, in addition to the logistics, I'd book my tickets to come to the Western States training camp weekend as well, especially first timers, to get an idea of the trail and to get a feel of the environment. And if it is indeed this once in a lifetime opportunity, hey, do it. Mm-hmm. That weekend is incredible, by the way. That weekend is incredible. You get 70 miles of the course right there. And Craig and the team do an amazing job. It's like three race days. I mean, there's aid stations, there's twice as many runners as do the race. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things I'd be thinking about. And the logistics are don't ignore those. Get your work thing figured out. Mm-hmm. Get it so that you can get in that headspace to come with your A game when you get here. You should not come to Western States without your A game.
Are you doing some coaching? I hear you say coaching. So are you on the I Run Far coaching
team?
No.
I'm my own gig. I'm a little plug. AJW's coaching gig. I coach this year. I'll put out to 10 athletes. I have one right now, so I'll take 9 more. I just do it via email, and I coach for beer. They just pay me in beer. call up the local beer store near my house, and we do that. I coached six guys and one gal last year at Western States. Four of them finished. They had some great goals. They had a good time and so forth. So I like doing it. I just do it for Western States runners, and very much in the sort of specificity of trying to get ready for this race at this time in where they are in their lives.
Good. Scott will link that. And in typical...
Link what?
Is it
your email address?
Your email address.
Do you want us to give out your email address?
Well,
to the whole
I think
nation?
I'll probably... I think the consultant, the clients will come to me in the next couple of weeks, I think. But yeah, you can put it out there, sure.
Okay. So another
it's,
thing...
And it's not... It's I don't coach... It's not like an elite thing. I coach 29-hour runners and 24-hour runners. And I just... They just... It's more of... It's not... It's kind of a laid-back coaching approach geared towards experience with Western States rather than, you know, this is going to make you, achieve your, win the race.
So a couple other things. Yeah. So the training runs are going to open on December 10th. Thank you for advertising.
Yeah.
Not that we need to advertise those.
Is there a limit? Do people need to know whether there's a limit?
Yeah, there's a limit. I don't have them set yet. I got to do that here.
Well,
like,
December 10th
day.
Is like 3 days.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I work hard.
So
I work a lot.
Exactly. So the logistics.
But the other thing is they should read every single page of our website if they're in the race.
They should
scour it.
They should also go to conductthejuices.com and click on the Western States link. This is Craig Thornley's personal blog that has everything from course descriptions to race reports to all
crewing.
It's just a crewing report from Lori, Craig's spouse. It's an incredible resource for Western
States. And every racer got a entrant packet, right? The little brochure?
The printout?
Yeah.
No, that's old school.
Oh, okay.
No.
Evidently, I ran too long ago.
Well, yeah.
I slept with that next to my bed.
It's all in the cloud.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on the website.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't print stuff out anymore.
In typical fashion, in closing, at least on your tap room, you review a beer, and you're drinking something over there, AJW. Why don't you give us a little review on what you were drinking, and then we'll close up.
This is Mac Forest Ale.
No, I'm not going to talk about
that. You're not drinking the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale?
I'm going to talk about my go-to beer for life.
It's in a can.
It's Sierra Nevada can.
Look at how he's staring at it.
It's
like lovingly,
you're my
right?
Only friend.
Look at that. It's my love.
This question was for me,
dude,
people.
Geez.
He's coddling the.
Yeah, that's a definite gong. He talked about Western States like it was a long lost love, but now that he's talking about his beer.
Sierra Nevada canned conditioned pale ale. The stuff's incredible. It set the standard for American Pale Ales in 1987, and it has not looked back. It leads with a mildly hoppy front and a smooth, warming aftertaste. And I tell you what, it goes down like water.
What's your pre-race?
Oh, pre-race, I have four of these.
Trail Runner Nation members, go get yourself some pre-race brew. Go to the website at trailrunnernation.com. Find us on Twitter at
We Are Nation.
Facebook is something similar.
Yeah, just search it.
Get up.
It's on there somewhere.
So go out and run.
Moss.